The title of today's sermon is 666, Ubiquitous Mark of the Beast. And I'd like to begin today in Revelation chapter 15. Brethren, we do not yet understand everything about the beast in the end time, but we will understand. God's word tells us that. The mark of the beast is going to be everywhere. That's what ubiquitous means. And it'll be everywhere soon. The mark of the beast is a clear concept in the scriptures. That's not something that we're speculating about. God has a great deal to tell us about it. We're told, do not get the mark of the beast. We're told what'll happen if we get it. We're also told what'll happen to us if we do not get the mark of the beast. Revelation 15 and verse 2. I saw as it were a sea of glass mingled with fire, and them that had gotten the victory over the beast and over his image and over his mark. There we see the mark of the beast and over the number of his name. Stand on the sea of glass, having the harps of God. This is speaking about that future marriage of the bride of Christ. That's what we will get if we do not have his mark. We have to have victory over his mark. That's what we want. Let's turn over to Revelation 20, a few pages back. This mark thing that we'll be looking at today, it's so sly. We need to be aware and prepared because there is a great reward if we avoid this mark. Revelation 20 and verse 4. And I saw thrones and they sat upon them and judgment was given unto them. And I saw the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness of Jesus. Yes, brethren, that's coming. Terrible torture, persecution. And for the word of God, and which had not worshipped the beast. There's a big clue right there. You can underline worshipped in your notes because that has a great deal to do with the mark of the beast. And had not worshipped the beast, neither his image, neither had received his mark upon their foreheads or in their hands. And they lived and reigned with Jesus Christ for 1,000 years, so we see the reward for not having the mark of the beast. All those who will rule and reign with Jesus Christ for 1,000 years will have rejected the mark of the beast. We're even told what the mark of the beast is, but that's been a little bit elusive, even to the church of God. Revelation 16, if you can turn back a couple of pages. And the first went and poured out his vial, this is the vial of God's wrath, upon the earth. And there fell a noisome and grievous sore upon the men which had the mark of the beast and had worshipped his name. So that's something that we want to shy away from with all of our strength. We don't want the mark of the beast. We are not going to worship his image. Now let's go back to Daniel 12, brethren, and if you have a marker, you can put it back there because we'll be going back and forth to Daniel a number of times today. That concept of worshiping the beast is a big part of the mark of the beast. We see in Daniel 12 and verse 9, and he said, go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end, verse 10, many shall be purified and made white and tried. This is talking about the church of God. But the wicked shall do wickedly. None of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. Don't you find that so encouraging? All things being equal, brethren, we will understand who this Mr. 666 is. We'll know him by his name. We'll know him by his number. We'll know him by his reputation. The wise shall understand, but the wicked, they'll just go right on doing wickedly. The world is going to remain wicked in the dark until the very end. We have so much given to us, but for God's own purposes, God will not make it clear to anyone until the very close of the age. The church has not fully understood about the mark of the beast. The last time we saw Nebuchadnezzar's dream and how it represented the history of the Gentile kingdoms that subjugate Jerusalem right up until the moment that Jesus Christ returns and establishes the kingdom of God on earth. Then later, Daniel had his own vision about the specifics of the kingdom that are extant in the last days, even when Christ returns. You remember what Daniel saw? He saw four beasts with the attributes of a lion, a bear, a leopard, and the last one was a dreadful and terrible beast. We'll look at those specifically in a moment. Revelation 13. We'll be flipping back and forth between Revelation and Daniel. Here is what we know about the beast. The beast is influenced by Satan. Satan wants more than anything to destroy the plan of God. And he doesn't care who he uses to accomplish his goal. He hates God. He hates those that love God. That's the church brethren. He hates us that much. Revelation 13 and verse 2. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard. I want you to notice the parallel between what is spoken of here in Revelation 13 and what we saw in Daniel 7. It's like a leopard, and his feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth is the mouth of a lion. And the dragon, that's Satan, gave him his power and his seat and great authority. Verse 3. And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. So let's understand that some nations who consider themselves to be Christian nations, God doesn't look at them as Christian nations. According to God, they will be satanic in nature at the end. We'll see very clearly that this whole world is going to be in terrible straits. Revelation 13 and verse 4. And the, I'll just add, entire world worshipped the dragon. This is Satan's religion, satanic worship. The entire world worshipped the dragon, which gave power to the beast. Let's never forget that. And they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? Saying to themselves, well, it's not really anybody that can take on the beast. The entire world is going to be worshiping the beast and Satan who empowers him. Revelation 13 and verse 5. And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things. But brethren, these are not good things. And blasphemies. And power was given unto him to continue for 42 months. That's the 3.5 years that we talk about so often. Revelation 13 and verse 6. He opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. The beast will blaspheme God and his name, cursing, swearing, and speaking irreverently of God. Now I'd like to flip back to Daniel chapter 7 and verse 25. I want to show you a parallel scripture that shows that we're talking about this same beast power. Daniel 7 and verse 25. And he shall speak great words against the Most High, and he shall wear out the saints. You can write a little me over in your side margin there. He's going to wear out the saints of the Most High. Brethren, that's you and me. And think to change times and laws. Somehow he's going to change up calendars and times of doing things. And they shall be given into his hand, again, for 3.5 years. None of the saints who are still alive and functioning in society, none of us will be able to keep the Sabbath and worship God publicly. Perhaps we'll be able to do so in secret places, but no longer in the open like we're doing today, or on the internet and teleconferences and the church halls and Feast of Tabernacles and so forth. Back to Revelation 13 and verse 7. And it was given unto him, this is the beast, to make war with the saints and to overcome them. Now that doesn't sound like good news. But all things are possible in the hands of God, and God's going to work it out, and God's going to be our rear guard and take care of us, and some will be martyrs for the gospel's sake. Overcome them, and power was given him over all kindreds, tongues, and nations, over the whole world. This is a great power that the beast has. Verse 8, and all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him. Again, that's that mark of the beast in action, whose names are not written in the book of life. And the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. Verse 9. If any man have an ear, let him hear. God is saying that what we're looking at right now is really important to understand. We need to understand these factors. Any man has an ear, let him hear. The beast is going to fight against Christ. He's going to fight against the resurrected saints. We see that in Revelation 19 and verse 19. And I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against Jesus Christ. Put that right there. That sat on the horse and against his army. That's the saints of God, because we will always be with Jesus Christ at that time and onward. Verse 20, and the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet that worked miracles before him, with which he deceived them that had the mark of the beast. Anybody that has the mark of the beast is deceived. But we're looking at what's going to ultimately happen to the beast power and his mark and all those that are with him. Let's see what happens. With them which received the mark of the beast, and them that worshipped his image, these both were cast alive into a lake of fire burning with brimstone. So that's the ultimate end of the beast. Revelation 14, brethren. What is this ubiquitous mark of the beast that the entire world will accept? First, we need to be acutely aware of how God feels about this mark of the beast. Revelation 14 and verse 9. Let's look at it from God's perspective. Yes, you and I, we might fear it. We might wonder about it. We might say, no way am I going there. Let's look at it from God's perspective. Revelation 14 and verse 9. If any man worship the beast in his image and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, there is nothing more severe, brethren, than the wrath of God and the torment of God's indignation. Notice verse 10. The same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out without mixture. It means it's undiluted, it's full strength. God's wrath to the max, into the cup of his indignation. And this person who accepts the mark of the beast shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. Let me give you a time setting. This 1 year of God's wrath follows the 2.5 years of Satan's wrath. God's wrath is at the end of the tribulation. Revelation 14 and verse 11. And the smoke of their torment ascends up forever and ever, and they have no rest day or night who worship the beast or his image. So they'll never return from it. They'll never come back. It's a done deal. And whosoever receives the mark of his name. Verse 12. Here's the patience of the saints. Okay, brethren, here's what we're looking for. Here are they that keep the commandments of God. That's something we will be doing till the very return of Christ and beyond. God's law is a spiritual law. It's always good and right. We'll keep the commandments of God. And that includes the Saturday Sabbath and the faith of Jesus Christ. Now, we breeze over that little phrase there, the faith of Jesus Christ. The faith of Jesus Christ, what's that all about right now? It's important for us to understand. So it's a little bit more than just keeping the Sabbath. There's this other thing about walking in faith with Christ. Contrast this with those who have their names written in the book of life. Revelation 14 and verse 1. We see what happens to those who have the mark of the beast. They end up with the fire and the brimstone. What happens to those who are God's people? Revelation 14 and verse 1. And I looked, and lo, a lamb, that's Jesus Christ, stood on Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having the Father's name written in their foreheads, not the mark of the beast, but the Father's name. We need to understand about the beast and his mark. As we begin, I wish to assure you that the mark of the beast is not something as mundane, as commonplace, or as tedious as most TV evangelicals would suppose. The mark of the beast is not your social security number, or your driver's license number, or a barcode, or a tattoo, or 666 branded on your forearm or your head. Like the Jews. You remember how the Jews of World War II that were being carried off to the concentration camps, to the extermination camps, they were branded with a number on their arm. The mark of the beast is not going to be like that. The mark of the beast is not going to be recognized for what it is, except by those who are very spiritually astute. That means we have to remain close to God. We have to be close to God. We have to be walking in faith, laying our life down, fellowshipping with the brethren. We have to be Christians. And then, and only then, will we know what the mark of the beast is. With the coming of technology, all these technologically advanced electronic devices, speculation in many camps has turned towards devices implanted inside the body. Radio frequency identification, RFID chips. Some of them are hardly larger than a grain of rice. They've been implanted in pets, you know, dogs and cats for years. That's for identification purposes. That is not and will not be the mark of the beast. I'm not saying that's not going to take place, but it's not going to be the mark of the beast. It's almost that bad right now, the encroachment on our private rights, the way we're tracked with GPSs and our phones. They can tell what TV station you're watching and all that. That's not the mark of the beast. That's just the Orwellian society that we're in. So it's not going to be a chip or a trademark or a credit card number or copyrights or barcodes or scannable, this new QR, quick response code, the little square one that you see on the packages of everything these days. In spite of the fact that the governmental surveillance and invasion of personal privacy has increased so much, their spying is not going to have anything to do with the mark of the beast. Oh, it could be the way the beast tries to find people and keeps track of people all over the world. But that's not the mark of the beast that God's talking about here that we must avoid. If you're being tracked, don't think, okay, the beast has me in his scope. They can already track us on our cell phones and watch all kind of things that we're doing. The mark of the beast is so much more profound than that. Certainly, those encroachments and others right up to and including human trafficking and slavery, that's going to be widespread in the end. But that's not the mark of the beast. No one's going to receive the mark of the beast by force or accident. They're not going to hold you down, hog tie you, and give you the mark of the beast. Those are foolish things to worry about. God is more loving and giving and protective of his people. This is something that we have control over. We live in a horrible world. We even see the mutilation of their daughters by Muslims. The mark of the beast will not be imposed or inflicted by force on anyone in that fashion. It's going to be a matter of character. It's going to be a matter of personal choice. We see in Revelation 13 and verse 5 that the beast will kill those who do not have his mark. So we're not going to have it. We are going to be in danger of being killed. And the scriptures are clear. Some Christians will die. They'll be persecuted and tortured to death. But the beast will not be able to force his mark on anyone against their will. That's not the way it's going to work. Our loving Creator God is not so capricious as to make something like a brand or a tattoo the object of his wrath. And we saw in Revelation 14 how God hates this mark of the beast and how he's going to pour out his wrath undiluted on those who have it. That's not a tattoo. The mark of the beast, again, is much more profound than that. The Bible has a lot to say about marks. The last time we saw that Nebuchadnezzar's image was a vision of the times of the Gentiles leading up to the return of Jesus Christ, when the promised land in Jerusalem would be restored to Israel and Judah and to the kingdom of God. As we look at history, we see that Jerusalem has floated in the middle of a sea of Islam, most notably the Ottoman Empire. And even today, a pagan Islamic temple sits on top of the Temple Mount. Nebuchadnezzar was not the first Babylonian king. His significance lies in the fact that God raised up a Gentile king to subjugate and rule over the promised land, and especially over Jerusalem. Now, there exists a very common view of the book of Daniel, and it is that Daniel, in his first vision in chapter 7, Daniel chapter 7, saw the same thing that Nebuchadnezzar witnessed in his dream of chapter 2. I'm going to show you, brethren, briefly, that they are different visions and different dreams of different times. It's often assumed, wrongly assumed, that the two visions are essentially the same, and that Daniel's vision simply interprets Nebuchadnezzar's dream. However, an objective analysis and a right translation shows that there are actually more differences in these visions than there are similarities. The fact that Nebuchadnezzar's dream actually contains five kingdoms rather than four begins to clarify the inconsistency. It was God himself, pick up on this, it was God himself who gave the interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's dream. He gave it to Daniel, who returned it to Nebuchadnezzar, as we saw. However, Daniel couldn't understand his own dream. It had to be interpreted by an angel. You can just put down Daniel 7, verses 16 to 27. That's all explained in there. But there's a big difference. Daniel knew what Nebuchadnezzar's dream was. He didn't know what his own dream was. God had opened up that knowledge to Daniel of Nebuchadnezzar's dream. The angel had to give the interpretation to Daniel because he had no idea what he had seen. Yet, the meaning of Nebuchadnezzar's dream was perfectly clear to him. It was entirely known to him, and he shared that with Nebuchadnezzar. So we have to draw the conclusion then that Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar did not see the same thing. Nebuchadnezzar's dream shows sequential Gentile kingdoms, one succeeding another, particularly in its possession of the promised land. But Daniel's vision actually shows contemporary powers, powers that exist alongside of each other at the same time. That's how they exist. Daniel 7 and verse 3, if translated correctly, says, "And four great beasts are coming up from the sea, diverse one from another." That's the correct translation. Brethren, we have to be careful. We can be thrown off, and many men have been. But for those for whom these prophecies are written, it is clear in God's word, they will understand. So it becomes clearer as we get closer to the end time. So even though the four beasts seem to be described sequentially, one after the other, they are all seen at the same time, but in separate locations. This Aramaic translation is awkward indeed. And it's like the same way in English. This word before, it can mean prior in a time sequence, like Jesus Christ was born before Columbus discovered America. That's a time sequence. But here in Daniel, it means in front of him. So thus, the last part of Daniel 7:7 is saying that the fourth beast was different from the other beasts that were in its presence, and it had 10 horns. The three beasts are in the presence of a superior, a more mighty, a more powerful entity. And so they are described as being before it, not before it in time, just, and since we know that the fourth beast is in existence at the time of Jesus Christ's return in the end time, that's very, very clear. It means the other three beasts, which are shown to be in its presence contemporaneously, are also existing at the time of the end. That helps us to understand Daniel chapter 7, where we see that the fourth, the one that's called the dreadful and terrible beast, the beast that has the little horn, is killed and thrown into the fire, but the other three, apparently, in God's estimation, they're not as bad. God lets them live on. They're not thrown into the fire with the brimstone like the beast is. God has mercy on those three, and he prolongs their life for a little while, though their dominion's taken away from them, because at that point, all authority when Christ returns is going to belong to Jesus Christ. None of the beasts will have any authority once Christ returns. That happens at the same time the fourth beast is slain and thrown into the lake of fire, as we saw a moment ago in Revelation 19 and verse 20. So there's a big difference between Nebuchadnezzar's dream and Daniel's vision. When we think of Daniel, we often think of him as the 16-year-old who's carried away from Israel over into Babylon. We think of him as a young man. And he was. He was in his teens when he came to Babylon from the Promised Land. He was probably about 18 years old when he was standing before Nebuchadnezzar explaining Nebuchadnezzar's dream. But in Daniel chapter 7, Daniel's about 83 years old. A lot of time, a lifetime has gone by. At least 65 years have passed since the time of Nebuchadnezzar's dream. We're now in the first year of Belshazzar. That's the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. Just think, Nebuchadnezzar, the head of gold in the dream, he had died 23 years before Daniel had his vision. Belshazzar sees the writing on the wall, and he's slain that very night, as a matter of fact. At that point, we've come to the end of the prophecy of the head of gold. And that's when Daniel receives his vision. So Daniel's not seeing that the head of gold is coming up because it's just now closing down on the head of gold. Nebuchadnezzar's dream was practically over, while Daniel's vision was of things yet in the future. They're not the same dream. In Daniel 7 and verse 17, the King James Version rightly says that these three beasts are four kings which shall arise out of the earth. Nebuchadnezzar's dream was past tense at this time. He's talking about, in Daniel 7, four kings that are future. If the two dreams were the same and the head of gold represented the same thing as the lion with the eagle's wings, which was the first thing that Daniel saw, the lion would have been dead for two decades when Daniel saw it. Doesn't make any sense. Daniel saw four future kings, and he saw them after the head of gold had already reigned and died. Now, it might seem like a small detail, but it greatly affects our received narrative in the church, where we made them one and the same thing, and how we understood Daniel's vision. In Daniel 2, Nebuchadnezzar's dream, the last part of it, the feet of iron and clay, that was an amalgamation, a mixture, as we saw. In Daniel's vision in chapter 7, the end time power is shown with multiple nations, and 10 leaders or kings come out of just one of those kingdoms. There's a great clarification that is taking place in Daniel's vision that wasn't shown in Nebuchadnezzar. It was the fourth kingdom that is shown as being dominantly strong, while the other beasts were weaker. That's what we see in Daniel 7. God does not consider them to all be uniform in their transgressions. They're not all equally bad because they're not uniform in their hearts and their attitudes. This is what we're told and what we're to understand about these kingdoms that arise in the end time. They're a mixture of brutal strength on one hand and relative weakness. As Daniel 7 and verse 3 says, the four kingdoms are diverse one from another, too different to truly be unified in strength. Both visions, Nebuchadnezzar's and Daniel's, are related in that they both contain a glimpse of the end time. The final manifestation of their last part of their images is the same. That's the beast power at the return of Jesus Christ. However, Nebuchadnezzar's image and vision and dream spans 2,500 years, ending with the return of Christ, while Daniel's vision is of those things immediately preceding and taking place just before the return of Jesus Christ. What Daniel sees and had to have explained to him by an angel takes place during the time of Nebuchadnezzar's fifth empire, the last one, the feet of iron and clay. The 10 toes of Nebuchadnezzar's dream, they appear to correlate with the 10 horns of Daniel's vision. Daniel's vision contains more details of the final beast empire. There's a very similar prophecy found in the book of Hosea. I'd like you to turn over there and look at this with me, brethren. The book of Hosea. It further helps us to understand what Daniel was seeing in an overall sense. This prophecy stretches from Hosea 4 all the way through Hosea 14. It's a big, long prophecy. But it's a terrifying indictment against the house of Israel. When you say the house of Israel, go, uh-oh, that's me. That's Britain. That's America. That's us. And Judah, for turning completely away from God. And I've spoke many times about how the Ten Commandments are being removed from our courthouses and our schools, and we're turning our back on God. There is a terrifying indictment in Hosea against us for doing that. But Hosea also contains reassurances of hope that Israel will return to God after their punishment is over. Hosea 13, verses 6 to 9, it contains a figure that very closely resembles what Daniel saw in his vision. Now we know, brethren, that Ephraim and Manasseh, and it's often represented by simply Ephraim in the scriptures, Ephraim became rich and well-fed, and they forgot God. And so what happened? God became Ephraim's adversary. In Hosea 13, in verse 6, we read, "According to their pasture, so were they filled." Yes, this is the nation of the golden wheat fields and so forth, and cows on a million hills. "They were filled, and their heart was exalted." Brethren, that's us today. We can have fresh fruit in January. "Their heart was exalted because of it, however. Therefore," God says, "have they forgotten me." God says, "I'm going to be unto them like," and then God's going to describe these vicious beasts in the end time. This is right before, preceding the return of Jesus Christ when this takes place. Notice Hosea 13 and verse 7. "Therefore I will be unto them as a lion, as a leopard, by the road will I lurk." Now, in your notes, you can compare that to Daniel 7 and verse 4, because what did Daniel see? He saw a lion, he saw a bear, he saw a leopard. Notice Hosea 13 and verse 8. "I will meet them as a bear that is bereaved of her whelps," of the little bear cubs, "and will rend the rib cage of their heart." The Greek is pericardium, the thing that encages the heart. "And there will I devour them like a lion." Brethren, I want to point something out to you. This is what we have to do in Bible studies. But in Hosea 13:7, a few verses before, it said a lion. And there, lion means lion. This is a different word in King James when he says, "I will devour them like a lion." That's a different word. Right here, it means a great, fierce, stout lioness. "The wild beast shall tear them." Talking about Israel. And what does Daniel say? He talks about this beast as being dreadful, terrible, and strong. You see the parallel between Hosea and Daniel? In Hosea 13 and verse 9, God says, "O Israel, you have destroyed yourself, but in me is your help." The themes here are definitely in time, in nature. Hosea 13, verse 12 and 13, it talks about how the trouble is going to come on us like a woman in childbirth. Now, that's the way Jacob's trouble is described in a number of places. Let's talk about this final beast, this terrible beast, as Daniel called him, dreadful, strong. There's something about this fourth beast that in God's sight goes too far. God knows it's going to happen. God allows it to happen. God permits it to happen. But there's something about this beast that goes beyond measure, more than God intended. Perhaps it's because this beast is too prideful, too cruel, too hateful. Something about it crosses the line and goes outside the will of God. But God allows it, and then God utterly destroys the beast. But he doesn't do that to the other three beasts. I put this in your notes, brethren. You don't have to turn there. But there's an example of this same principle over in Isaiah chapter 10, verses 5 through 19. There, the nation of Assyria, Germany, is identified as the rod of my anger and the staff in whose hand is my indignation. In other words, God is going to use Germany, modern-day Germany, ancient Assyria, same people, as the rod of his anger to correct Israel, as Britain and the United States, and all the English-speaking nations around the world. God sends Assyria against an ungodly nation, and he gives it charge, he gives it authority to seize the spoil. Sure, come in and take what gold's left, take the valuables, take the companies, take the manufacturing, if there's any left, take the prey, take the spoil, and tread them down like mire in the streets. Most of you don't remember a muddy street where horses had gone back and forth and what it's like when it rains. Tread them down like the mire in the streets. However, even though Assyria is being used by God, definitely being used by God, Assyria goes further in its punishment than God intended, than God wants. We read in Isaiah 10, verses 7 and 8, yet he, that's Assyria, does not mean so, nor does his heart think so. If you ask him, no, I'm doing okay, I didn't go too far. His heart does not think so, but it is in his heart to destroy, to cut off, not a few nations, doesn't know when to stop. For he says, are not my princes altogether kings? You know, aren't we the mighty? Aren't we the best? Aren't we the greatest? Aren't we the Aryan people? Aren't we the most notable of people on the earth? The ancient Assyrians, they used sheer, unadulterated terror to subdue their enemies. I'll just give you an example of one of the kings. It was Assyrian king Ashurbanipal. It was his policy to always demand that examples be made of those who resisted them, even when they were conquering. This included deportation. We see how these Assyrians deported all the northern 10 tribes out of Israel. So that's what German kings did. They deported entire peoples, tribes, and populations. And they also heaped horrific physical punishments on their people. You know, there's an inscription from a temple. I believe it might still be there. That might have been brought to Germany. A lot of these artifacts were carried off into Germany. But there's an inscription from that temple of the city of Nimrod that recorded the fate of Ashurbanipal's enemies. King Ashurbanipal, he enslaved, he tortured, he flayed, he skinned alive, he starved them to death, he impaled them. He took his enemies, he sharpened wooden stakes, and he impaled them by the roadside and left them there for all to see. Then he took their children and he raised them in pens like animals, like you would see hogs being raised today, to be used in forced labor camps. His cruelty was unimaginable. And God cites that in 2 Kings 19 and verse 6. We read, and Isaiah said unto them, thus shall you say to your master, thus says the Lord, be not afraid of the words which you have heard, with which the servants of the king of Assyria has blasphemed me. Brethren, it started with Assyria, it ends with Assyria. 200 years and 19 kings after the time of Solomon, and Solomon was the last king to rule over a united Israel, the northern kingdom of Israel fell to Assyria, as we just talked about. It was because of idolatry. It was because of Sabbath breaking. They had so forsaken God. We read in Amos 4 in verse 2, the Lord God has sworn by his holiness that, lo, the day shall come upon you that he will take you away with fishhooks. We're talking about what Ashurbanipal did and what Assyria did to the children of Israel. This is the way the Germans, the Assyrians, dealt with Israel back then. Put a fishhook in their lips and your children with fishhooks. Amos 4 in verse 3. And you shall go out of the breaches. That's talking about where they tore the walls of the city down. As the Assyrians led Israel away captive, they followed their typical custom. This is the way they always did it. When the Assyrians depopulated and exiled a conquered community, they led the captives away on these long march journeys of hundreds of miles, and the captives were naked. They were attached together with a system of strings and ropes and fish hooks pierced through their lower lip. God made sure they were led in this humiliating manner through the broken walls of their conquered and fallen cities. You can read about that again, Amos 4, 2, and 3. In the end, however, when God is finished using Assyria to chasten Israel, he says, I will punish the fruit of the arrogant heart of the king of Assyria and the glory of his haughty looks. That's because the king of Assyria, he takes the credit away from God. He's too harsh with the captives of America, and he's too harsh with the captives of Great Britain. And brethren, we're talking about end time beast powers. These things are reflective of what the beast is going to do in the end time. There is coming a great and tortuous deportation of the peoples of Israel. And so, Assyria, the instrument of God's wrath upon Israel, likewise receives God's wrath for their own sins, especially the pride. So this appears to be what's happening in Daniel 7, where the fourth beast is destroyed, but the other three are left alive. The notable horn in Daniel 7 not only speaks pompous words against God, the High One of Heaven, but these words are spoken against God himself. We've seen it already. I'll mention it briefly. Daniel 7 and verse 25, he shall speak great words against the Most High. And we saw that also in Revelation 13:5, speaking great things in blasphemy. And he's going to be in power 3.5 years, 42 months. It's no wonder that God destroys the beast while leaving the lion, the leopard, and the bear alive, because they don't go to such horrible ends. Let's go ahead and concentrate a little bit more on the mark of the beast. And let's go to Revelation 13 and verse 16. And he, the image of the first beast, causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads. Let's notice the two ways. God's way is the way we're supposed to live, and the beast's way, which is the opposite of the way we're supposed to live. Put this in your notes. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 8. Moses told God's people to keep all of his statutes and commandments, noting, you shall bind them as a sign on your hand and as frontlets between your eyes. So you see, God's commandments and statutes are in the same place that you find the mark of the beast. It can be on your hand or on your head. Again, a choice is to be made by us about what God tells us we're to do, what we're to believe. That's our head and our hands. We do with our hands. We believe with our heads. As opposed to what the beast is going to espouse and demand of everyone. Are there good marks? Yes. You can put down Ezekiel 9 and verse 4. It talks about, this is God telling Ezekiel, set a mark upon the foreheads. There are good marks. So Ezekiel's going to be doing that in the end time as well. We need to understand to a very basic, foundational understanding what this mark of the beast is about, to have it straight in our minds. Just put that in your notes and study it out. Ezekiel 9, 4 through 6. And then Revelation 13 and verse 17, this mark that the beast is going to have, it says, and that no man might buy or sell unless he has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. And so right here we come to the title of today's sermon, 666, ubiquitous mark of the beast, because we read in verse 18, here is wisdom, Revelation 13 and verse 18. Let him that has understanding count the number of the beast, for it's the number of a man, and his number is 666. 666. Brethren, this should send chills up and down our spine of any of us who are aware of the mark, because it's going to exclude us from being a part of society. We won't be able to buy or sell. The beast system is going to derive from socialism and atheism. And we see that beginning in the world today. God warns us about this coming system. It's going to be so much worse than any of us can imagine. We have to have the mark of the beast to be a part of society, and we're not going to have it. It means we will not be a part of society. This final beast empire is going to be very much a religious system of socialism and atheism, which is going to be imposed on all the peoples of the earth. It's not going to be like our religion at all. The beast system is spoken of widely throughout the scriptures, and it's called the beast, the fierce beast with the teeth of steel. It's called the man of sin, the little horn, the son of perdition. God speaks so much about it. But this beast is going to be bound and destroyed in the end by Jesus Christ. The beast claims to be God, and he's worshipped. You can see that in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. He's going to blaspheme God, as we've seen a number of times today. He's going to be a miracle worker. Boy, is that going to draw a lot of adherence. Here we begin to identify what the mark of the beast actually consists of. The beast leads people into idolatry. It's not simply Sunday worship. The beast leads people into idolatry. You can put down 2 Thessalonians 2:4, 2 Thessalonians 2:9-10, Revelation 13:12-14. And I want you to notice that the beast comes back to life, whatever that means. Was he dead like we know dead? Or did his system break down and shut down and people said, that's it, it's all washed up? The beast comes back to life, working with the false prophet. Revelation 13 and verse 12. And he exercises all the power of the first beast, that's the man of sin before him. And he causes the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast. Brethren, that's idolatry. That's a part, that's a big part of the mark of the beast, the worshiping this first beast, whose deadly wound was healed, so we can decide which one we're looking at here. Worship belongs only to the true God, not to a short-lived political, religious, economic system. Revelation 13 and verse 13. And he, speaking of the false prophet, the miracle worker, he does great wonders. He works miracles so that he makes fire come down from heaven on earth in the sight of men. Verse 14. And he deceives them that dwell on the earth by means of those miracles, which he, that's the false prophet, had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast. Again, that's idolatry. That is going to be something very real. And this isn't the image that you see in the Catholic Church where there's a statue or a wood of wood or plaster of Paris and people kneel before it. Even in the Catholic Church, they didn't think they were worshiping, papier-mâché idols. They thought, okay, this represents whatever the image was. This image of the beast is another way of worshiping the beast, which had the wound by the sword and did live. Brethren, we keep our eyes open because this image to the beast in verse 14, it might be a reference to the abomination of desolation. We need to put all these scriptures together. And we're still talking about the mark of the beast having to do with idolatry. In 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 3, we read, let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and the man of sin be revealed. He's going to be out there. Everybody's going to see him. The son of perdition, he's called there. In verse 4, who exalts, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worship, so that he as God, he's not, as God, he sits in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. That's going to be hard for anybody to resist. You might say, oh, I'm not going to fall for it. I'll show you in a moment how many will fall for it. 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 9. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan. Now that's, Satan can really fool a lot of people. With all power. All power, brethren. You know, a magician can fool me. Don't say I can't be fooled when Satan uses all power to deceive. All signs and lying wonders. 99%, let me change that, 99.999% of the world and the churches are going to be deceived. And they will put on the mark of the beast. They will have the mark of the beast. 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 10. And with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. That verse 10, that's what will save us, brethren. There's a very strong sorting out that it's coming. And it's coming fast. We're closer to these days than we realize. Verse 11, and for this cause God shall send them strong delusion that they should believe a lie. So not only is Satan using satanic power to deceive everybody, the people that are perishing, that hate God, that worship the beast, God's going to also make sure that they believe the lie of the beast. Now we come to a big, big clue about the mark of the beast. Here it is in 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 12. That they all might be damned who believe not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. They're going to throw all in for the beast power. They're going to be a part of it. They're going to want it. They're going to cherish it. They're going to have pleasure in that unrighteousness. They're going to accept it. Whole hog, as we used to say. Big question. Who revels in unrighteousness? Who will go along with the beast by either making war against the saints or by causing those who would not worship the beast to be put to death? All of these scriptures are describing the final beast. The Bible shows that this person is going to be a great political power and a religious influence, a personage with the prophecies that are of global significance. Let me ask you this, brethren. Who's going to jump on the beast's bandwagon? Who's going to hitch their wagon to his star? Who's going to ride on his coattails to fame and fortune? Because that's what's going to be going on. His is going to be the only game in town, and people are going to swarm to him. It's going to be the greatest movement the world has ever seen. It's going to be terrific. But understand this. The world, as we once knew it, is going to be turned completely and entirely upside down. Our world, what I consider to be my world, especially the glory days of Britain and America, those were days of decency. People worked hard. They paid their bills. They loved their families. They were just. They were moral law keepers. We believed in our country. We believed in our Constitution and its laws. There was a sense of right and justice. People wanted to be the good guys in those days. When they went to the movies, they associated with the good guys in the movies. It's kind of hard to imagine how that is all going to change in the world of the beast power. But brethren, it's already in the offing. It's beginning to happen, and it's soon to appear. At first, the changes are subtle. Things are different today at the movies. The bad guys are becoming the heroes. The new movies contain an inordinate amount of demonic involvement. There's so many werewolves and demons and horrible things Brethren, don't go see that stuff. Do not allow it into your mind. There are alien creatures at the movies, and they lack natural affection. They're outside the law. They're unmerciful. They're grotesque. They're brutal. I can't even describe it. And they all possess a disdain for God and His way and His righteousness and His love. What is that doing to men's minds? The United States Constitution is held in derision by the president and his people. Christian rights are being severely eroded. The world is changing upside down. The Ten Commandments are being removed. The American flag is being stomped on. Turn over to Isaiah chapter 5. American soldiers and sailors and airmen are lied to and despised by our president. Let me give you one small piece of anecdotal evidence. I am personally appalled at the irreligious conduct and lack of character of our president and his staff all the way down. They have all remained silent, except in their admiration of the perpetrators of this bold, law-breaking misconduct that we saw last week. And now, our news services and press corps have already sold their hypocritical souls and their allegiance to the coming beast power. They're already on board. They've already hitched their wagon to his star. They did so by refusing to acknowledge the nasty religious abuse heaped on one female member of our 10 American sailors. She had this filthy Muslim garment thrown over her head by an Iranian loyalist in total violation of her holy and sacred rights as a woman, as a member of our armed forces, as a citizen of the United States of America. Can you imagine the outcry if we had captured an Iranian woman and abused her in the exact same way by the removal of her hijab, exposing her head? We would never hear the end of having violated Islam. Our Washington officials would find it justified if Islamic terrorists, radical Islamic Muslim terrorists, carried out another Paris-like slaughter in retaliation. They'd think, it's only fair. Look, they took her headscarf off. That immoral conduct by the president and the news media is symbolic of the mark of the beast. There's a total deference in high regard to all things evil. This world is changing. This is not the world of my youth. Isaiah put it this way. Isaiah 5 and verse 20. Woe to them that call evil good and good evil and put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Our world is being turned around backwards right in front of our eyes, brethren. The beast power is descending. His mark is coming upon many. They put down, up, and up, down, turning our world upside down. The ubiquitous mark of the beast will be instrumental in destroying the world to the point that it's past redemption. Why else would Jesus Christ say, except in those days, they would be shortened? If they weren't shortened, there would be no flesh saved alive. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. We're in deep debt. $20 trillion. It's soon to be $40 trillion. It's going to double faster than anybody thinks. Already, this president is at the point of having spent as much as all previous presidents, putting us into financial ruin. We're that much in arrears. That's our debt. You know what's going to happen? Money is going to become meaningless. When people talk about $40 trillion, that's an unimaginable amount of money. Nobody's going to even ever hope to try to pay it back. The entire money system is going to collapse. It's going to be abandoned in favor of something else. Let's go to Daniel chapter 11, brethren. Let's look at this beast power a little bit and his mark. The condition that our nation is in is broken morally, spiritually, politically, racially, economically. All Europe is on the verge of having its social services overwhelmed And add to that the coming Islamic incursion and resurgence. There's a new birth of Islam that's taking place. And right now, you've seen all of this trafficking going into Europe. Only 10% of Syria and Iraq migrants who are coming have arrived so far. There are 8-10 million still on the way. What's going to happen to the infrastructure? There's a crisis. There's a disaster looming. What's going to give? Germany's right-wing anti-Muslim immigrant party is surging ahead. I should say anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant party is surging ahead in popularity. And it's hit an all-time high in the number of constituents. In Daniel 11, we're going to see some of the inner workings of the beast power in these verses. Again, the beast is against God and his people. Verse 32, Daniel 11 and verse 32. And such as do wickedly against the covenant, pick up on that, shall he corrupt by flatteries. But the people that do know their God shall be strong. Their brethren, God's always given us the hope and the encouragement. We have to stand strong. We will do exploits, it tells us in verse 32. Right here when it says by flatteries, that means that this beast power is going to have a glib tongue. And he promises everyone greatness. Join me and be great. It's like you win the lottery. They're going to stick with him. Remember that the beast will be working hand in hand with the false prophet. Let me talk about him for just a second. Perhaps this false prophet will be a pope, or maybe he'll be a Muslim cleric. But I think something different, brethren, might happen. As we look at how the Ottoman Empire shaped up and everything, I think that this false prophet might be a combination of the two. He might be a Mahdi figure, an incarnation of a false Messiah that works miracles. And boy, will people fall for that. The Catholics will fall for it. The Muslims will fall for it. There's going to be, and those two, sure, that's an amalgamation. Those don't mix together. Verse 34. Let's just read through here for a second. Daniel 11 and verse 34. Now when they shall fall, they shall be helped with a little help, but many shall cleave to them with flatteries. In God's church, there are a few good people who are going to cry aloud and spare not. Verse 35. And some of them of understanding shall fall to try them, and to purge, and to make them white, even to the time of the end, because it is yet for a time appointed. Verse 36, and this king shall do according to his will. This beast power is going to do whatever he wants. He shall exalt himself. He shall magnify himself above every god. This guy is going to be known. He's not going to be in the shadows. He shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and he shall prosper all the way up to the end, till the indignation be accomplished. And for that is determined, shall be done. Daniel 11, verse 37. Let's take a good look at this beast power right here. He's going to throw away everything that's sacred and holy and right from the past. Notice what it says. Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers. Get rid of God. Get rid of all of those holy things. Nor the desire of women. Maybe that's saying that he's going to be a homosexual. Nor regard any god, for he shall magnify himself above everything. He's going to rule by force, brethren. He's not going to use gold to back his currency. He will incorporate an entirely new economic basis. Notice this in verse 38. But in his estate shall he honor the God of forces. So he's going to rule with guns. Maybe they'll take the guns away from everybody. And a God whom his fathers knew not shall he honor with gold and silver and precious stones. So he's going to set up his own little image with all the gold and stuff. That's what he's going to use that for, in pleasant things. Verse 39. Thus shall he do in the most strongholds with a strange God. I don't care how strong your battlements are, how well protected you think you are, he's going to be everywhere. Whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many. I want you to pick up on that. A part of the beast power is a lot of people making it to the top and ruling over a lot of people. He shall cause them to rule over many, and shall divide the land for gain. So things aren't going to stay the same. Property rights are not going to be the same as they are now. Verse 40. And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, and so forth. And he shall enter into the promise, into the glory land, down in verse 41. You know the story there, brethren. So how's this all going to play out? Do you know, Herbert W. Armstrong died 30 years ago today. We came to the countdown of the return of Jesus Christ, number 666, on this anniversary. It does cause one to pause and consider where we are. In some ways, the time has gone by very quickly. In other ways, we've seen so much change in the world and in the church. The mark of the beast will soon be everywhere. Mr. Armstrong taught that the Bible is basically a spiritual book, and he's absolutely right on that. And that the mark of the beast will be something with strong spiritual overtones. Absolutely. Ungodly spiritual overtones. Mr. Armstrong believed that whatever the mark was, it would be something that would be a contrast to the sign that shows we're God's people. That's the Sabbath. You can put down Exodus 31, verse 13. The Sabbath is a sign between me and you, God says. And so the mark, Mr. Armstrong said, will include a veneration of Sunday. Yes, Sunday is going to be big in the whole wherewithal of the beast power. And there will be a prohibition against gainful employment on that day. So one of the things that we can look for is the observance of Sunday. Those who keep Sunday will bear the mark of the beast. We believe Sunday worship will most assuredly be demanded by the beast. And it's going to work out. This move is targeted at Jews. They keep the Sabbath. It's targeted at Muslims because they have Friday observance. And, of course, Sabbath keepers like ourselves. Muslims get together on Friday. The beast either thinks to change times and laws, as we saw the scripture said, changing the law of God, or he sets himself up in the temple of God, claiming that he's God. The implication is that he has the authority to do these things. Just with the mark of his pen and his cell phone, maybe he'll do it like the president does it. He's just going to do it by executive action. We read in Daniel 7 and verse 25 that he will change times and laws. That's what he's going to think to do. Brethren, when that happens, we're not going to be able to hold Sabbath services or to buy or to earn a wage or a salary or to engage in business at any time, anywhere. But that's only a part of it, brethren. That's not the whole mark of the beast. There is so much more. I do not think that the Seventh-day Adventists, they keep the Sabbath, and the Jews, they observe the Sabbath, even Messianic Jews will be able to avoid the mark of the beast. But they are Sabbath keepers. Keeping the Sabbath by itself is not enough to fully avoid the mark. Remember, Jesus Christ said, and you also have to have the faith of Christ, whatever that means. Those groups, the Seventh-day Adventists, the Jews, the Messianic Jews, I believe they will acquire the mark of the beast along with the rest of the world. And unfortunately, some in the Church of God will also take on the mark of the beast. These are difficult times. Those people will try to go to church on Saturday, and they won't get any tattoos with 666 on them, but they'll still get that mark of the beast. And that's because there's more to the mark of the beast. The mark of the beast goes deeper than that. We need to understand this because everyone who has succumbed to the attitude and the mindset and the wherewithal of the beast system, they're going to endure the seven last plagues. They'll be going through these things during the tribulation, after the tribulation. Those who have the mark of the beast will be like he is. They'll have the same motivations as the beast. They'll have the same desires as the beast. They'll have the same philosophy of life and temperament, a way of thinking and behaving. They're going to be like the beast. So, brethren, spiritually the total picture goes much deeper. The beast represents a governmental system. He's going to be the personality of the beast system. The beast system is going to have an extremely dark side to it. There will be a philosophy of life that puts fear into people. You know, Hitler's Europe was only a facsimile of the terror to come. In a spiritual sense, the mark of the beast is Satan's attitude. It's mean-spirited, it's deceptive, cruel, cunning, and destructive. No wonder Revelation says, who can make war against the beast? You remember the mark of Cain back in the beginning of the Bible? What was his mark? Cain was cruel, he was hateful, he was destructive, he was a murderer. We're told in 1 Peter 5 and verse 8, we need to be sober and vigilant because Satan goes about seeking who he might destroy, devour. The mark of the beast is nearer than we like to believe. Oh, sure, we wish it was far away and easily rejected, brethren. This world, this entire world is going to move over to the dark side in mass. Like I said, look at where the movies are going. Look at where the government is going already. We don't like to think that we in God's church still have murderous traits within ourselves. Would we take advantage of each other? We like to believe that we'd never sell anybody out, especially a brother or sister in Christ. Most of us have not had to deal with a minister that has sold his soul to the corporate organization. But Satan's cunning. That minister thinks he's done God a favor, it says in John 16:2, when he disfellowships you. You want to know about the spirit in man? It's like a carnal mind. That's what Satan's going to appeal to. That spirit will be emanating from the beast in power, great power. He'll be marking men. Will you be a part of the beast's pyramid scheme? Will you ride the system to the top with the beast, with promises of untold power and wealth and acclaim and even immortality? He'll promise that. The beast's power is a great satanic Ponzi scheme that will leave Bernie Madoff in the shade. There will be no concern for the welfare of others, no empathy. It's going to be a dog-eat-dog culture where only the well-placed will survive. Allegiance to the beast's attitude, to this satanic attitude. It's going to be required. This beast, he's going to be suave. He's going to be cool. He's going to be debonair, cultured and refined, a man going places, a flatterer, a rewarder. Remember how attractive Satan was to Eve? He was so attractive, a third of the angels went with him. The beast will be that persuasive and that attractive. Negative attitudes prevail with those who have the mark of the beast. The mark is the worst thing that has ever happened. It is the attitude that killed Jesus Christ, Savior and Son of God. All the time, fully believing in the right of the satanic authority to commit such an atrocity. People will think, I've got the power of God, because Satan's going to present himself as God through the beast. Let me give you a scenario, brethren, in closing, of how things just might work out. This is speculation on my part, but I try to put the pieces together. I try to look at what's happening to my world. I try to ask myself, how are all of these things going to unfold? And I'll just throw out a little bit of it. I can't even give it all to you because it's just too bad. Notice how rapidly this posture of a wrong way of thinking is already beginning to permeate our society. It's taking over. I hate to even see it in the little kids. It's there. The world has long relied on a gold standard as a currency and value in trading. Every nation is right now getting in serious financial and economic trouble because of violations of God's financials law. The whole world is about ready to go belly up. There's a good chance that the beast will ascend, possibly on a rising tide of global and financial despair. After all, the world is in horrible, serious financial straits. But what if this new world order relies on another fiat currency, not backed by gold or any other commodity, but something else? What if the beast did away with gold and said, let's rely on something with a more intrinsic value, like human life? And let's be concerned about the environment more than these other things. Let's save our planet. Everyone will say, wow, that's really neat. There's nothing so valuable as life itself and our planet. It's going to be like everyone will win this billion-dollar lottery. The problem is that we forget the Assyrian mindset. It's going to be there. Remember what we saw in Isaiah chapter 10. Assyria doesn't mean to be so mean and cruel and heartless and destroying. The Germans say, are not my princes altogether kings? That attitude is still extant in the Germanic people. That means Germans are more equal than everybody else. So when everybody gets to be worth $1 billion, you know what's going to happen? Some people will still get themselves into hock. And others who used to end up with all the money, now they'll end up owning hordes of people. Because if everyone's rich and everyone has unlimited credit and the beast power makes it so wonderful that everybody jumps on board, we're going to go back to our same old ruts. Somebody's going to end up with all the debt. Somebody's going to end up with all the people. They'll own their properties as well. Something like that's going to happen. We saw in Daniel 11:39 that this beast is going to cause them to rule over many, and he shall divide the land for gain. That's quoting verse 39. And we've seen already that the Assyrians are more cruel than everybody else. But just like in World War I, World War II, nobody but Winston Churchill saw their detestable traits until it was too late. At this point, the beast is going to be ruling, and all of the groupies, the follow-alongs, are going to go along for the ride. They'll join in, following and supporting the beast and making his way work, aiding and abetting his every scheme. They'll jump on his bandwagon. They'll hitch their wagon to his star. They'll ride his coattails to power and fame. At this point, everyone will be throwing caution to the wind because there is no fallback position. That Satan-inspired attitude of greed and power and cruelty will be gripping everyone with a passion. It's going to be a dog-eat-dog world. That beast is going to articulate the grievance of the masses. He's going to institute and implement an entirely new system, a world upside down. He'll come up with his own constitution and bill of rights, all rolled into one. It's not going to be anything like ours. It would be based on the inestimable value of every living soul. The beast is going to say to everyone, you are worth more than you know. Everyone's credit is going to be limitless. You know what? Here in America, we have the dollar. What do the Germans have? The Germans have the mark. That's another interesting point. What we're talking about here, this mark of the beast, we're talking about a new German mark. Industry, economy, building and expansion would immediately expand exponentially as everyone purchases their dreams, their desires. We in God's church, we're going to be greatly tempted to be a part of that incredible system with the untold profits and happiness and dreams being fulfilled. But brethren, it's all a Bernie Sanders-like socialist Ponzi scheme, and very soon they are going to run out of other people's money to spend. In Daniel 11 and verse 36, talking about the beast power, it says, he shall cause them to prosper till the indignation be accomplished. And for that is determined shall be done. Brethren, it's going to crash, and it's going to crash hard. What I think is going to happen at that point is too horrendous to talk about. It's the time of Jacob's trouble. Lives by the billions will be left in slavery to this curse. That's what's going to happen. When we get to that point, we're into the tribulation as the beast tries desperately to regain his domination. He's going to try to tighten the controls. Let's go to Matthew 24 in closing. This world is simmering and seething as we speak, and will soon break out into a raging fire. We've been warned not to have anything at all to do with the beast or his mark, because we could easily, very easily, be caught up in his mark. It's going to be very tempting. It's going to be attractive. It's going to be lucrative. The miracles are going to be beyond belief. Matthew 24 and verse 24. For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that, if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect.